I heard he's been moved.
Our spies are reliable, Keenan says. Mazin would know if he'd been transferred.
My neck prickles. Something's not right. What aren't you telling me?
Keenan rubs a stubble on his face, and my unease swells. It's nothing you need to worry about, Liar.
10 hells! I turn his face toward me, forcing him to meet my eyes. If it affects Darren, I say, I need to worry about it. Is it Mazin? Has he changed his mind?
No, Keenan's tone does little to reassure me. I don't think so. But he's been strange. Quiet about this mission. Hiding the spy reports.
I try to justify this. Perhaps Mazin is worried the mission will be compromised.
When I say as much, Keenan shakes his head. It's not just that, he says. I can't confirm it, but I think he's planning something else. Something big. Something that doesn't involve Darren. But how can we save Darren and take on another mission? We don't have enough men.
Ask him, I say. You're his second. He trusts you.
Ugh, Keenan grimaces. Not exactly.
Has he fallen out of favor?
I don't get a chance to ask. Ahead of us, the caravan lurches out of the way, and the pent-up crowd surges forward. In the crush, my cloak rips free. Keenan's eyes drop to the scar. It's so prominent, so red and hideous, I think miserably. How could he not look? 10 bleeding hells, what happened?
The Commandant punished me a few days ago.
I didn't know, Liar. All his aloofness dissolves as he stares at the scar. Why didn't you tell me?
Would you have cared?
His eyes jerk to mine, surprised. Anyway, it's nothing compared to what it could have been.
She took Izzy's eye.
And you should see what she did to Cook. Her entire face. I shudder. I know it's ugly. Horrible. No, he says the word like it's an order. Don't think that. It means you survived her. It means you're brave.
The crowd moves around me, past me. People elbow and mutter at us. But then it all fades because Keenan has taken my hand and is looking from my eyes to my lips and back up in a way that needs no translation. I notice a freckle, perfect and round, at the corner of his mouth. A slow warmth uncurls low in my body as he pulls me to him. Then a leather-clad mariner shoves past, breaking us apart, and Keenan's mouth twitches in a brief, rueful smile. He squeezes my hand once.
I'll see you soon.
He melts into the crowd, and I hurry back toward Blackcliff. If Izzy knows of an entrance, I still have time to see it for myself and head back here to pass along the information. The Resistance can get Darren out, and I'll be done with all of this. No more scars or whippings. No more terror and fear. And maybe, a quiet part of me whispers, I'll get more than just a few moments with Keenan. I find Izzy in the back courtyard, scrubbing sheets beside the water pump.
I only know of the hidden trail, Liar, Izzy says to my question. And even that's not secret, just so dangerous that most people don't use it.
I vigorously crank water from the pump, using the squeal of metal to drown out our voices. Izzy's mistaken. She has to be.
What about the tunnels? Or do you think one of the other slaves will know something?
You saw how it was last night. We only got through the tunnels because of Veturius. As for the other slaves, it's risky. Some of them spy for the Commandant.
No, no, no.
What just minutes ago seemed like a wealth of time, 8 whole days, is no time at all. Izzy hands me a freshly washed sheet, and I hang it on the line with impatient hands.
A map, then. There must be a map to this place somewhere.
At this, Izzy brightens.
Maybe, she says. In the Commandant's office.
The only place you'll find a map of Blackcliff, a raspy voice intrudes, is in the Commandant's head.
And I don't think you want to go rummaging around in there.
I gape like a fish as cook, as silent-footed as her mistress, materializes from behind the sheet I've just hung up. Izzy jumps at cook's sudden appearance, but then, to my shock, she stands and crosses her arms.
"There must be something," she says to the old woman. "How'd she get the map in her head? She must have a point of reference."
"When she became commandant," cook says, "the augurs gave her a map to memorize and burn. That's how it's always been done at Blackcliff." At the surprise on my face, she snorts.
"When I was younger and even stupider than you, I kept my eyes and ears open. Now my head's filled with useless knowledge that does no one any good."
"But it's not useless," I say. "You must know of a secret way into the school."
"I don't."
The scars on cook's face are livid against her skin.
"And if I did, I wouldn't tell you."
"My brother's in Central's death cells. He's going to be executed in days, and if I don't find a secret way into Blackcliff..."
"Let me ask you a question, girl," cook says. "It's the Resistance who says your brother's in prison. The Resistance who says he's going to be executed, right?
But how do they know?
And how do you know they're telling the truth? Your brother might be dead. Even if he is in Central's death cells, the Resistance will never get him out. A blind, deaf stone could tell you that."
"If he was dead, they'd have told me. Why can't she just help me?
I trust them, all right? I have to trust them. Besides, Mazin says he has a plan."
"Bah!" cook sneers.
"The next time you see this Mazin, you ask him where exactly your brother is in Central. What cell? You ask him how he knows and who his spies are. Ask him how having an entrance to Blackcliff will help him break into the most fortified prison in the south. After he answers, we'll see if you still trust the bastard."
"Cook," Izzy speaks up, but the old woman whirls on her.
"Don't you start. You've got no idea what you're getting into. The only reason I haven't turned her into the commandant," cook practically spits at me, "is because of you. As it is, I can't trust that slave girl won't give up your name to make the commandant go easy on her."
"Izzy," I'd look to my friend, "no matter what the commandant did, I would never..."
"You think the carving on your heart makes you an expert in pain," cook says. "Ever been tortured, girl? Ever been tied to a table while hot coals burned into your throat? Ever had your face carved up with a dull knife while a mask poured salt water into your wounds?"
I stare at her stonily. She knows the answer.
"You can't know if you betray Izzy," cook says, "because you've never had your limits tested. The commandant was trained at Koff. If she interrogated you, you betray your own mother."
"My mother's dead," I say.
"And thank the skies for it. Who knows what damage she and her rebels would have caused if she still lived."
I look at cook, askance. Again, the stutter. Again, when she's speaking of the Resistance.
"Cook,"
Izzy stands eye to eye with the old woman, though she somehow seems taller.
"Please help her. I've never asked you for anything. I'm asking you now." "What's your stake in it?"
Cook's mouth twists like she's tasted something sour.
"Did she promise to get you out? To save you?"
"Stupid girl. Resistance never saves anyone they can leave behind."
"She didn't promise me anything," Izzy says. "I want to help her because she's my friend."
"I'm your friend," cook's dark eyes say. I wonder for the 100th time who this woman is and what the Resistance and my mother did to her that she would hate and mistrust them so much.
"I just want to save Darren," I say. "I just want out of here." "Everyone wants out of here, girl. I want out. Izzy wants out. Even the damn students want out.
If you want to leave so badly, I suggest you go to your precious resistance and ask for another mission. Somewhere where you won't get yourself killed. She stalks away, and I should be angry, but instead I'm repeating what she said in my head. Even the damn students want out. Even the damn students want out. Izzy, I turn to my friend. I think I know how to find a way out of Blackcliff. Hours later, as I crouch behind a hedge outside Blackcliff's barracks, I'm wondering if I've made a mistake. The curfew drums thud and fall silent. I've been sitting here for an hour with roots and rocks digging into my knees. Not a single student has emerged from the barracks. But at some point, one will. As Cook said, even the students want out of Blackcliff. They must sneak out. How else would they manage their drinking and whoring? Some must bribe the gate guards or tunnel guards. But surely there's another way out of here. I fidget and shift, exchanging one prickly branch for another. I can't lurk in the shadow of this squat shrub for much longer. Izzy is covering for me, but if the Commandant calls and I don't appear, I'll be punished. Worse, Izzy might be punished. Did she promise to get you out? To save you? I promised Izzy no such thing. But I should. Now that Cook's brought it up, I can't stop thinking about it. What will happen to Izzy when I'm gone? The Resistance said they'd make my sudden disappearance from Blackcliff look like suicide. But the Commandant will question Izzy anyway. The woman's not easily fooled. I can't just leave Izzy here to face interrogation. She's the first true friend I've had since Zara. But how can I get the Resistance to shelter her? If it hadn't been for Sunna, they wouldn't have even helped me. There must be a way. I could bring Izzy with me when I leave this place. The Resistance wouldn't be so heartless as to send her back, not if they knew what would happen to her. As I consider, I set my sights back on the buildings before me, just in time to see two figures emerge from the Skull's barracks. Light glints off the lighter hair of one, and I recognize the prowling gait of the other. Marcus and Zack. The twins turn away from the front gates and pass by the tunnel grates closest to the barracks, instead heading for one of the training buildings. I follow them, close enough to hear them speak, but far enough that they won't notice me. Who knows what they'd do if they caught me trailing them? "Can't stand this," a voice drifts back to me. "I feel like he's taking over my mind." "Stop being such a damned girl," Marcus replies. "He teaches us what we need to avoid the Augur's mind-leeching. You should be grateful." I edge closer, interested despite myself. Could they be speaking of the creature from the Commandant's study? "Every time I look into his eyes," Zack says, "I see my own death. At least you'll be prepared." "No," Zack says quietly. "I don't think so." Marcus grunts in irritation. "I don't like it any better than you do. But we have to win this thing. So man up." They enter the training building, and I grab the heavy oak door just before it shuts, watching them through the crack. Blue fire lanterns dimly light the hall, and their footsteps echo between the pillars on either side. Just before the building curves, they disappear behind one of the columns. Stone grates against stone, and all goes silent. I enter the building and listen. The hallway is quiet as a tomb, but that doesn't mean the Farahs are gone. I make my way to the pillar where they disappeared, expecting to see a training room door. But there's nothing there. Only stone. I move on to the next room. Empty. The next. Empty. Moonlight from the windows tinges every room a ghostly blue-white, and they are, all of them, empty. The Farahs have disappeared. But how? A secret entrance. I'm certain of it. giddy relief floods me. I found it. Found what Mazin wants.
Not yet, liar.
I still have to figure out how the twins are getting in and out. The next night, at the same late hour, I position myself in the training building itself, across from the pillar where I saw the masks disappear. The minutes pass. Half an hour. They don't appear. Eventually, I make myself leave. I can't risk missing a summons from the commandant. I feel like shouting in frustration. The Faraz might have disappeared into the secret entrance before I ever got to the building, or they might arrive there when I'm already in my bed. Whatever the case, I need more time to watch.
"I'll go tomorrow," Izzy says, when she meets me in my quarters as the final peals of 11th bell fade.
"The commandant rang for water, asked where you were when I took it to her. I told her Cook sent you on a late-night errand, but that excuse won't work twice.
I don't want to let Izzy help, but I know I won't succeed without her. Every time she leaves for the training building, my resolve to get her out of Blackcliff grows stronger. I will not leave her here when I go. I cannot.
We alternate nights, risking all in the hopes that we'll spot the Faraz again. But maddeningly, we come up with nothing. "If all else fails," Izzy says the night before I'm to make my report, "you can ask Cook to teach you how to blow a hole in the outer wall. She used to make explosives for the resistance."
"They want a secret entrance," I say. But I smile because the thought of a giant, smoking hole in Blackcliff's wall is a happy one.
Izzy heads out to watch for the Faraz, and I wait for the commandant to summon me. But she doesn't, and instead I lay in my pallet, staring at the pitted stone of my roof, forcing myself not to imagine Darin suffering at the hands of the marshals, trying to figure out a way to explain my failure to Mazin. Then, just before 11th bell, Izzy burst into my room.
"I found it, Lyra! The tunnel the Faraz have been using! I found it!"
Chapter 32. Elias. I start losing battles. It's Tristus's fault. He planted the seed of Helene being in love with me in my head, and now it's sprouted like a misbegotten weed from hell. At sim training, Zack comes at me with unusual sloppiness, but instead of obliterating him, I let him knock me on my ass because I've caught a glimpse of blonde across the field. What does that lurch in my stomach mean? When the hand-to-hand centurion screams at me for poor technique, I barely hear him. Instead, considering what will happen to Helen me. Is our friendship ruined? If I don't love her back, will she hate me? How am I supposed to get her on my side for the trials if I can't give her what she wants? So many bleeding, stupid questions. Do girls think like this all the time? No wonder they're so confusing. The third trial, the trial of strength, is in 2 days. I know I have to focus, to ready my mind and my body. I must win. But in addition to Helene, there's someone else crowding my thoughts. Lyra. I try for days not to think about her. In the end, I stop resisting. Life is hard enough without having to avoid entire rooms in my own head. I imagine the fall of her hair and the glow of her skin. I smile at how she laughed when we danced, with a freedom of spirit I found exhilarating in its possibility. I remember how her eyes closed when I spoke to her in Sadhis. But at night, when my fears crawl out of the dark places in my mind, I think of the dread on her face when she realized who I was. I think of her disgust when I tried to protect her from the commandant. She must hate me for subjecting her to something so demeaning, but it was the only way I could think of to keep her safe. so many times in the past week. I've nearly walked to her quarters to see how she is. But showing kindness to a slave will only bring the blackguard down on me. Lyra and Helene, they're so different. I like that Lyra says things I don't expect, that she speaks almost formally, as if she's telling a story. I like that she defied my mother to go to the Moon Festival, whereas Helene always obeys the Commandant. Lyra is the wild dance of a tribal campfire, while Helene is the cold blue of an alchemist's flame. But why am I even comparing them? I've known Lyra a few weeks, and Helene all my life. Helene's no passing attraction. She's family. More than that, she's part of me. Yet she won't speak to me, won't look at me. The third trial is days away, and all I've gotten from her are glares and muttered insults. Which brings another worry to the forefront of my mind. I'd been counting on Helene winning the trials, naming me Bloodshrike, and then releasing me from my duty. I can't see her doing that if she loathes me. Which means that if I win the next trial, and if she wins the final trial, she could force me to remain Bloodshrike against my will. And if that happens, I'll have to run. And then honor will demand that she have me hunted down and killed. On top of that, I've heard students whispering that the Emperor is days away from Serra, and planning vengeance against the aspirants and anyone associated with them. The cadets and skulls pretend to shake off the rumors, but the yearlings aren't so skilled at hiding their fear. You'd think the Commandant would be taking precautionary measures against an attack on Blackcliff, but she seems unconcerned. Probably because she wants us all dead. Or me, anyway. You're screwed, Elias, a wry voice tells me. Just accept it. Should have run when you had the chance. My spectacular losing streak doesn't go unnoticed. My friends are worried about me, and Marcus makes a point of challenging me on the combat field every chance he gets. Grandfather sends a two-word note, inked with such force that the parchment is torn. Always victorious! All the while, Helene watches, growing more infuriated every time she beats me in combat, or witnesses someone else beat me. She's itching to say something, but her stubbornness won't let her. Until, that is, she finds Dex and Tristus tailing her to the barracks 2 nights before the third trial. After interrogating them, she finds me.
What the hell is wrong with you, Vittorius?
She grabs my arm outside the Skull's barracks, where I was heading for a bit of rest before a graveyard shift on the wall.
You think I can't defend myself? You think I need bodyguards?
No, I just...
You're the one who needs protection. You're the one who's been losing every battle. Skies, a dead dog could best you in a fight. Why don't you just hand the Empire over to Marcus right now?
A group of yearlings watches us with interest, scurrying away only when Helene snarls at them. I've been distracted, I say, worrying about you.
You don't need to worry about me. I can take care of myself. And I don't need your henchmen following me. They're your friends, Helene. They're not going to stop being your friends just because you're mad at me. I don't need them. I don't need any of you. I didn't want Marcus to... Screw Marcus. I could beat Marcus to a pulp with my eyes closed. And I could beat you too. Tell them to leave me alone.
No. She gets in my face, anger radiating off her in waves.
Call them off.
Not gonna do it. She crosses her arms and stands inches from my face.
I challenge you. Single combat, 3 battles. You win, I keep the bodyguards. You lose, you call them off.
Fine, I say, knowing I can beat her. I've done it 1,000 times before. When?
Now. I want this done with.
She makes for the closest training building, and I take my time following, watching the way she moves. Angry, favoring her right leg, must have bruised the left in practice. Keeps clenching that right fist, probably because she wants to punch me with it. Rage colors her every movement. Rage that has nothing to do with her so-called bodyguards, and everything to do with me and her and the confusion rolling around inside both of us. This should be interesting. Eileen heads for the largest of the empty training rooms, launching an attack the second I'm through the door. As I expected, she comes at me with a right hook, hissing when I duck it. She's fast and vengeful, and for a few minutes I think my losing streak might continue. But an image of Marcus gloating, of Marcus ambushing Eileen, sets my blood boiling, and I unleash a vicious offense. I win the first battle, but Eileen rebounds in the second, nearly taking my head off with the swiftness of her attack. 20 minutes later, when I yield, she doesn't bother to relish the victory.
Again, she says. Try and show up this time.
We circle each other like wary cats until I fly toward her, my sim high. She is undaunted, and our weapons crash together in a starburst of sparks. Battle rage takes me. There is perfection in a fight like this. My sim is an extension of my body, moving so swiftly that it might be its own master. The battle is a dance, one I know so well I barely have to think. And though the sweat floods off me and my muscles burn, desperate for rest, I feel alive, obscenely alive. We match each other stroke for stroke until I get a hit on her right arm. She tries to switch sword arms, but I jab my sim at her wrist faster than she can parry. Her sim goes flying, and I tackle her. Her white blonde hair tumbles free of her bun.
Surrender!
I pin her down at the wrists, but she thrashes and rips one arm free, scrabbling for a dagger at her waist. Steel stabs at my ribs, and seconds later I'm on my back with a blade at my throat.
Ha!
She leans down, her hair falling around us like a shimmering silver curtain. Her chest heaves. She's covered in sweat. Hurt darkens her eyes. And she is still so beautiful that my throat tightens, and I want so badly to kiss her. She must see it in my eyes, because the hurt turns to confusion as we gaze at each other. I know then that there is a choice to be made, a choice that might change everything. Kiss her, and she'll be yours. You can explain everything, and she'll understand, because she'll love you. She'll win the trials, you'll be Bloodshrike, and when you ask for freedom, she'll give it to you. But will she? If I'm entangled with her, won't that make it worse? Do I want to kiss her because I love her, or because I need something from her? Or both? All this passes through my head in a second.
Do it!
My instincts scream.
Kiss her!
I wrap her silk-smooth hair around my hand. Her breath catches, and she melts into me, her body suddenly, intoxicatingly pliant. And then, as I pull her face toward me, as our eyes are closing, we hear the scream.
Chapter 33 Liar. The school is mostly quiet when Izzy and I emerge from the slaves' quarters. A few students still out head to the barracks in small groups, their shoulders slumped with tiredness.
Did you see the Faraz go in? I ask Izzy on the way to the training building.
She shakes her head.
I was sitting there, staring at those pillars, bored as a stone, when I noticed one of the bricks was different. Shiny, like it had been touched more than the others. And then, well, come on, I'll show you.
We enter the building
and are greeted by the almost musical ring of clashing cymbals. Ahead of us, a training room door stands open, and gold torchlight pours into the hallway. A pair of masks battles within, each brandishing two slender cymbals. "It's Futurius," Izzy says. "And Aquila. They've been at it for ages." As I watch them fight, I find that I'm holding my breath. They move like dancers, whirling back and forth across the room, graceful, liquid, deadly. And so swift, like shadows on the surface of a river. If I wasn't watching it with my own eyes, I would never believe anyone could move that fast. Futurius knocks a sim from Aquila's hand, and he is on her, their bodies entangled as they wrestle across the floor with a strange, intimate violence. He is all muscle and force, and yet I can see in the way he fights that he is holding himself back. He is refusing to unleash his whole strength on her. Even still, there is an animal freedom to how he moves, a controlled chaos that makes the air around him blaze, so different from Keenan, with his restrained solemnity and cool interest. Why are you comparing them anyway? I turn from the aspirants. Izzy, come on. The building seems empty, other than Futurius and Aquila. But Izzy and I edge along the walls carefully in case there's a student or centurion lurking. We turn the corner, and I recognize the doors the Farrars used when I saw them enter here the first time nearly a week ago. "Here, Lyra." Izzy slips behind one of the pillars and raises her hand to a brick that, at first glance, looks like all the others. She taps it. With a quiet groan, a section of stone swings away into darkness. Lamplight illuminates a narrow descending staircase. I look down, barely daring to believe what I'm seeing, then envelop Izzy in a grateful hug. "Izzy, you did it!" I don't understand why she's not smiling back until her face goes rigid and she grabs me. "Shh," she says. "Listen." The flat tones of a mask's voice echo from the tunnel, and the stairwell glows with approaching torchlight. "Close it," Izzy says, "quickly, before they see." I put my hand to the brick, tapping it frantically. Nothing happens.
"Pretend you don't see it, but you do."
A vaguely familiar voice rises from the stairwell as I pour at the brick.
"You've always known how I feel about her. Why do you torment her? Why do you hate her so much? She's an illustrian snob. She'd never have you anyway. Maybe if you'd left her alone, I'd have had a chance. She's our enemy, Zack. She's going to die. Get over it." "Then why did you tell her that you two are meant to be? Why do I get the feeling that you want her to be your bloodstrike instead of me?" "I'm messing with her head, you bleeding idiot. And apparently it's working so well that even you're affected."
I recognize the voices now. Marcus and Zack. Izzy pushes me aside and punches at the brick. The entrance remains stubbornly open. "Forget it," Izzy says. "Come on." She grabs me, but Marcus's face emerges at the bottom of the stairwell, and, spotting me, he bounds up, reaching me in two strides. "Run!" I shout at Izzy. Marcus grabs for Izzy, but I shove her out of the way, and his arm wraps around my neck instead, choking off my air. He wrenches my head back, and I stare into his pale yellow eyes.
"What's this, spying wench? Trying to find a way to sneak out of the school?"
Izzy stands unmoving in the hallway, right eye wide in terror. I can't let her get caught, not after all she's done for me. "Go, Iz!" I scream.
"Run!" "Get her, you twit!"
Marcus roars at his brother, who has just emerged from the tunnel. Zack makes a half-hearted effort to grab Izzy, but she wrenches out of his grasp and runs back the way we came.
"Marcus, come on!"
Zack sounds exhausted and looks longingly toward the heavy oak doors that lead outside.
"Leave her be. We have to be up early." "Don't you remember her, Zack?"
Marcus says. I struggle and try to kick the soft place between his foot and ankle, but he yanks me off my feet.
She's the Commandant's girl.
She's expecting me. I choke out.
She won't mind if you're late.
Marcus smiles, a jackal's grin.
I made you a promise that day outside her office, remember? I told you that one night you'd be alone in a dark hallway and I'd find you. I always keep my promises.
Zack groans.
Marcus, if you want to be such a eunuch, little brother,
Marcus says,
then piss off and leave me to my entertainment.
Zack regards his twin for a moment, then he sighs and walks away. No, come back.
Just you and me, beautiful,
Marcus whispers in my ear. I bite viciously at his arm and try to wriggle away, but he spins me around by my neck and shoves me against the pillar.
Shouldn't have fought, he says. I would have gone easy on you. But then I like a little spirit in my women.
His fist comes whistling toward my face. An infinite, explosive moment later, my head hits the stone behind me with a sickening smack, and I'm seeing double. Fight back, liar. For Darin, for Izzy, for every scholar this beast has abused, fight! A scream bursts from me, and I claw at Marcus's face, but a punch to my stomach takes the wind out of my lungs. I double over, retching, and his knee comes up into my forehead. The hallway spins, and I drop to my knees. Then I hear him laughing, a sadistic chuckle that stokes my defiance. Sluggishly, I throw myself at his legs. It won't be like before, like during the raid, when I let that mask drag me about my own house like some dead thing. This time I'll fight, tooth and nail, I'll fight. Marcus grunts in surprise, losing his footing, and I untangle myself and try to scramble to my feet. But he catches my arm and backhands me. My head strikes the floor, and then he's kicking me until my flesh is minced. When I stop resisting, he straddles me and pins my arms down. I release one last scream, but it turns to a whimper as he lays a finger against my mouth. My eyes are closing, swelling shut. I can't see. I can't think. Far away, the bells of the clock tower toll 11.
Chapter 34. Elias. At the sound of the scream, I roll out from under Helene and onto my feet, the kiss forgotten. She falls unceremoniously to her back. The scream echoes again, and I snatch up my sim. A second later, she grabs hers and follows me into the hallway. Outside, the bell tower tolls 11. A blonde slave girl is running toward us. Izzy.
Help! She shouts. Please, Marcus is... he's...
I'm already running up the darkened corridor, Izzy and Helene behind me. We don't have to go far. As we turn a corner, we find Marcus hunched atop a prone form, his face stretched into a savage leer. I can't see who it is, but it's obvious what he's planning to do. He's not expecting company, which is why we're able to get him off the slave so quickly. I tackle him and rain down punches, growling in satisfaction at the snap of bone beneath my fist, reveling in the blood that sprays across the wall. As his head whips back, I stand and draw my sim, resting the point on his ribcage between the plates of his armor. Marcus scrambles to his feet, his arms in the air.
Are you going to kill me, Vittorius?
He asks, still grinning despite the blood dripping down his face.
With a training sim?
Might take longer. I drive it harder into his ribs. But it'll do the job.
You're on watch tonight, Snake,
Helene says.
What the hell are you doing in a dark hallway with a slave?
Practicing for you, Aquila.
Marcus licks a little of the blood off his lip before turning to me.
The slave puts up more of a fight than you do. Bastard. Shut it, Marcus, I say. Hell, check her.
Helene leans down to see if the slave is breathing. It won't be the first time Marcus has killed a slave. I hear her groan.
Elias.
What?
I'm getting angrier by the second, almost hoping Marcus will try something. An old-fashioned fistfight to the death will do me good. From the shadows, Izzy watches us, too frightened to move.
Let him go,
Helene says. I stare at her in shock, but her face is unreadable.
Go,
she says tersely to Marcus, pulling my sword arm down.
Get out of here.
Marcus smiles at Helene. That grating smirk that makes me want to beat the life from him.
You and me, Aquila,
he says as he backs away, eyes smouldering.
I knew you'd start to see it.
Leave, damn it!
Helene hurls the knife at him, missing his ear by inches.
Go!
When the snake disappears out the door, I turn on Helene.
Tell me there was a reason for that.
It's the Commandant's slave. Your friend, Lyra. I see then the cloud of dark hair, the gold skin, which had been obscured by Marcus's body before. A sick feeling fills me as I crouch down beside her and turn her over. Her wrist is broken, the bone jutting out against the skin. Bruises darken her arms and neck. She moans and tries to move. Her hair is a tangled mess, and both of her eyes are blackened and swollen shut.
I'll kill Marcus for this,
I say, my voice flat and calm, a calm I don't feel. We have to get her to the infirmary.
Slaves are forbidden from seeking treatment in the infirmary,
Izzy whispers from behind us. I'd forgotten she was there.
The Commandant will punish her for it. And you, and the physician.
We'll take her to the Commandant, Helene says. The girl's her property. She has to decide what to do with her.
Cook can help her,
Izzy adds. They're both right, but that doesn't mean I have to like it. I pick Lyra up gently, mindful of her wounds. She is light, and I pull her head to my shoulder.
You'll be fine,
I murmur to her.
All right. You're going to be just fine.
I stride out of the hall, not waiting to see if Helene and Izzy follow. What would have happened if Helene and I hadn't been nearby? Marcus would have raped Lyra, and she'd have bled out whatever life she had left on that cold stone floor. The knowledge fans the rage burning within me. Lyra shifts her head and moans.
Damn. Him.
To the lowest pit of hell, I mutter. I wonder if she still has the bloodroot I gave her.
This is too much for bloodroot, Elias.
Tunnel,
she says.
Darren, Mas...
Shh, I say.
Don't talk now.
All evil here,
she whispers.
Monsters. Little monsters. And then big ones.
We reach the Commandant's house, and Izzy holds open the gate to the servants' corridor. Upon seeing us through the propped kitchen door, Cook drops a bag of spice she's holding, staring at Lyra in horror.
Get the Commandant, I order her. Tell her that her slave is injured.
In here.
Izzy gestures to a low door with a curtain strung across it. I lay Lyra down on the pallet inside with aching slowness, one limb at a time. Helene hands me a threadbare blanket, and I pull it over the girl, knowing how futile it is. A blanket won't help her.
What happened?
The Commandant speaks from behind me. Helene and I duck out into the servants' corridor, now crowded with Izzy, Cook, and the Commandant. Marcus attacked her, I say. He nearly killed her.
She shouldn't have been out at this hour. I dismissed her for the evening. Any injuries she sustained are the result of her own foolhardiness. Leave her. You're on the east wall for watch tonight, as I recall.
Will you send for the physician? Shall I get him? The commandant stares at me as if I'm off my gourd.
Cook will tend to her, she says. If she lives, she lives. If she dies...
My mother shrugs.
Not that it's any business of yours. You slept with the girl, Vittorius. That doesn't mean you own her. Get to watch.
She puts a hand on her whip.
If you're late, I'll take every minute out of your hide. Or...
She tilts her head thoughtfully.
The slaves, if you prefer.
But... Helene grabs me by the arm and pulls me down the corridor.
Let go of me! Didn't you hear her?
Helene says as she hauls me away from the commandant's house and across the sand training fields.
If you're late to watch, she'll whip you. The third trial's 2 days away. How will you survive it if you can't even put on your armor?
I thought you didn't care what happened to me anymore, I say. I thought you were done with me.
What did she mean?
Helene asks quietly.
When she said you'd slept with the girl.
She doesn't know what she's talking about, I say. I'm not like that, Helene. You should know better. Look, I've got to find some way to help Lyra. For 1 second, put aside the fact that you hate me and want me to suffer and die. Can you think of anyone I can take her to? Even someone down in the city?
The Commandant won't allow it. She won't know. She'll find out. What's wrong with you? The girl isn't even a marshal, and she has one of her own to help her. That cook's been around for ages. She'll know what to do.
Lyra's words echo in my mind.
All evil here. Monsters. Little monsters. And then big ones.
She's right. What is Marcus if not the worst kind of monster? He beat Lyra with the intent of killing her, and he won't even get punished for it. What is Helene when she so casually shrugs off the idea of helping the girl? And what am I? Lyra's going to die in that dark little room, and I'm doing nothing to stop it.
What can you do?
A pragmatic voice asks.
If you try to help, the Commandant will only punish you both. And that will kill the girl for sure.
You can heal her. I realize it suddenly, stunned that I didn't think of it before.
The way you healed me.
No. Helene walks away from me, her entire body suddenly stiff.
Absolutely not.
I chase after her.
You can,
I insist.
Just wait half an hour. The Commandant will never know. Get into Lyra's room, and...
I won't do it.
Please, Helene. What's it to you, anyway?
Helene says.
Do you... Are the two of you... Forget that.
Do it for me. I don't want her to die, all right?
Help her. I know you can. No, you don't. I don't even know if I can. What happened with you after the trial of cunning was bizarre, freakish. I'd never done it before. And it took something out of me. Not my strength, exactly, but... Forget it. I'm not going to try it again. Not ever.
She'll die if you don't.
She's a slave, Elias. Slaves die all the time.
I back away from her.
All evil here. Monsters.
This is wrong, Helene.
Marcus has killed before.
Not just the girl.
This.
I look around. All of this! The walls of Blackcliff rise around us like impassive sentinels. There is no sound other than the rhythmic clink of armor as the legionnaires patrol the ramparts. The silence of the place, its brooding oppression, makes me want to scream. This school, the students that come out of it, the things we do, it's all wrong. You're tired. You're angry. Elias, you need rest. The trials. She tries to put her hand on my shoulder, but I shake her off, sick at her touch. Damn the trials, I say to her. Damn Blackcliff. And damn you too. Then I turn my back on her and head to watch.
Chapter 35 Liar. Everything hurts. My skin, my bones, my fingernails, even the roots of my hair. My body doesn't feel like my own anymore. I want to scream. All I can manage is a moan. Where am I? What happened to me? Flashes of it come back. The secret entrance, Marcus's fists, then shouts and gentle arms. A clean smell like rain in the desert, and a kind voice. Aspirant Veturius, delivering me from my murderer so I can die on a slave's pallet instead of a stone floor. Voices rise and fall around me. Izzy's anxious murmur and Cook's rasp. I think I hear the cackle of a ghoul. It fades when cool hands coax my mouth open and pour liquid down. For a few minutes, my pain dulls. But it's still near, an enemy pacing impatiently outside the gates. And eventually, it bursts through, burning and reaving. I watched Pop work for years. I know what injuries like this mean. I'm bleeding on the inside. No healer, no matter how skilled, can save me. I'm going to die. The knowledge is more painful than my wounds, for if I die, Darin dies. Izzy remains in Blackcliff forever. Nothing in the Empire changes, just a few more scholars sent to their graves. The shred of my mind that still clings to life rages. Need a tunnel for Mazin. Keenan will be waiting for a report. Need something to tell him. My brother is counting on me. I see him in my mind's eye, huddled in a dark prison cell, his face hollow, his body shaking. Live, liar, I hear him. Live. For me. I can't, Darin. The pain is a beast that's taken over. A sudden chill penetrates my bones, and I hear laughter again. Ghouls. Fight them, liar. Exhaustion sweeps over me. I'm too tired to fight, and at least my family will be together now. Once I die, Darin will eventually join me, and we'll see Mother and Father, Liss, Nan, and Pop. Zara might be there, and later, Izzy. My pain fades as a great, warm tiredness descends. It's so enticing, like I've been working in the sun, and have come home to sink into a feather bed, knowing nothing will disturb me. I welcome it. I want it. I'm not going to hurt her. The whisper is hard as glass, and it cuts into my sleep, yanking me back to the world, back to the pain. But I will hurt you if you don't clear out. A familiar voice. The Commandant? No, younger. If either of you say a word about this to anyone, you're dead. I swear it. A second later, cool night air pours into my room, and I drag my eyes open to see Aspirant Aquila silhouetted at the door. Her silver-white hair is pulled back in a messy bun, and instead of armor, she wears black fatigues. Bruises mar the pale skin of her arms. She ducks into the room, her masked face blank, her body betraying a nervous energy. Aspirant Aquila, I choke out. She looks at me as if I smell of rotting cabbage. She doesn't like me. That much is plain. Why is she here?
Don't talk.
I expect venom, but her voice shakes. She kneels beside my pallet.
Just keep quiet and let me think.
About what? My ragged breathing is the only sound in the room. Aquila is so silent that it seems as if she's fallen asleep, sitting up. She stares at her palms. Every few minutes, she opens her mouth, as if to speak. Then she clamps it shut again and wrings her hands. A wave of pain washes over me, and I cough. The briny taste of blood fills my mouth, and I spit it out on the floor. In too much pain to care what Aquila thinks. She takes my wrist, her fingers cool against my skin. I flinch, thinking she means me harm. But she just holds my hand, limply, the way you would if you were at the deathbed of a relative you barely knew and liked even less. She starts to hum. At first, nothing happens. She feels out the melody the way a blind man feels his way forward in an unfamiliar room. Her hum crests and falls, explores, repeats. Then something changes, and the hum rises into a song that wraps around me with the sweetness of a mother's arms. My eyes close, and I drift into the strain. My mother's face appears, then my father's. They walk with me at the edge of a great sea, swinging me between them. Above us, the night sky gleams like polished glass, its wealth of stars reflected in the oddly still surface of the water. My toes skim the fine sand below my feet, and I feel as though I'm flying. I understand now. Aquila is singing me into death. She's a mask, after all. And it's a sweet death. If I'd known it was this kind, I'd never have been so afraid. The intensity of the song swells, though Aquila keeps her voice low, as if she doesn't want to be heard. A flash of pure fire burns into me from crown to heel, snatching me from the peace of the seashore. I open my eyes wide, gasping, "Death is here," I think. This is the final pain before the end. Aquila strokes my hair, and warmth flows from her fingers into my body, like spiced cider on a freezing morning. My eyes grow heavy, and I close them again as the fire recedes. I return to the beach, and this time Lys races ahead of me, her hair a blue-black banner glowing in the night. I stare at her willow-fine limbs and dark blue eyes, and I've never seen anything so gorgeously alive. You don't know how I've missed you, Lys. She looks back at me, and her mouth moves, one word sung over and over. I can't make it out. Realization comes slowly. I'm seeing Lys. But it's Aquila who's singing. Aquila who is commanding me with just one word repeated in an infinitely complex melody. Live, 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 live. My parents fade. No! Mother! Father! Lys! I want to go back to them, see them, touch them. I want to walk the night shores, hear their voices, marvel at their closeness. I reach for them, but they're gone. And there's only me, and Aquila, and the stifling walls of my quarters. And that's when I understand that Aquila isn't singing me to a sweet death. She's bringing me back to life.
Chapter 36. Elias. The next morning at breakfast, I sit apart and speak to no one. A chill, dark fog has rolled in off the dunes, settling heavily over the city. It matches the blackness of my mood nicely. I've forgotten about the third trial, about the augurs, about Helene. All I can think of is Lyra. The memory of her bruised face, her broken body. I try to devise some way to help her. Bribing the head physician. No, he doesn't have the guts to defy the commandant.